Well, as we look to get to the other side of this health and economic crisis, we look to futurist studies to help guide us. HPR's Noe Tanigawa joins us this morning to talk about that. Good morning.
Hey, Catherine. So glad to get to introduce you to Professor Jairus Grove up at Political Science there at UH Manoa. He's director of the Hawaii Research Center for Futurist Studies. Basically took up the reins after Jim Dator left, and you've talked with Jim before. Well, you know, Professor Grove makes the point that they don't predict the future. What they do is they study alternatives, especially possibilities that we don't expect, you know, and their goal is to shape the future that we really desire. Part of that, Grove says, especially in the COVID-19 era, is looking at futures that we're really not taking seriously enough. And, you know, they're hard to even imagine. We're so caught up in the present. Well, he's saying our assumptions are affecting our responses. And he's saying that assuming we're going to get back to normal could limit our preparedness for what eventually really happens. Okay, some scenarios. What about one where there is no COVID-19 cure? Grove says, what are the possibilities if we imagine a world where lockdowns are kind of regular, you know, every 6 to 8 months, social distancing is permanent? As a political scientist and futurist, Grove is particularly worried about the democratic process in this critical election year. He contends democracy, as Americans have practiced it all these years, is going to look different with COVID-19 restrictions on social interaction.
What is that going to mean for really kind of the engines of democracy? Things like protests, forms of collective organizing and collective action that really require face-to-face interaction. It's an unfortunate reality, but it is the reality that democracy is not run by opinion polling. Very often, the will of the people is not fairly represented in the institutions that are elected to represent them. And then there's the other possibility, which has been a recurring feature in American history, which is that the majority opinion is unjust. And that to draw attention to that, to change people's minds, to insist on a better democracy has required a committed few, but a large number to collectively put themselves in the way. I mean, that's the history of civil rights in this country. That's the history of the right for women to vote in this country. One of the things that we're not taking seriously enough because we assume this is all temporary is that democracy will sort of be there when we get back to it. But what if COVID's permanent? Is to think seriously about how long you can leave democracy before it disappears.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's Grove's opinion that assuring the democratic process continues is one of the hugest challenges before us right now. And we're just not looking at it squarely because, you know, who has the mental space to do that?
Well, you know, we have seen, you know, lots of coverage of the different groups, you know, people who are just tired of being in quarantine, tired of being in isolation. They want to get out. They want to get back to their jobs. They want to get back to normal. And it's going to be a little dicey because, you know, there's the medical community that says, okay, we've got to be very cautious and do this right because we don't want a setback. We don't want another outbreak.
Well, you just wonder if the push and pull of the different sides on this has been as, let's say, contentious in other countries.
Yeah, and our community, our whole nation has been so fractured. You've got such great deep divisions, and so it is worrisome.
And Grovis absolutely agrees on that. Basically, he says, there's so much going on. Erosion of our democracy is just something that really could take us by surprise. And we have a big election ahead in less than 6 months.
The Constitution doesn't lay out three branches, right? It specifies and limits the authority of the executive branch, legislative branch, and judicial branch. But it relies on the fourth branch, which is the people. And if the only people who feel empowered or safe to gather at state houses are those who are armed, demanding an end to face masks, and implicit threat of violence is the only means for expressing political action, then that itself, I believe, is an indicator that we are losing our grip on democratic action. The very small minority will come to appear as a majority. And I think at that point in time, we'll lose a sense of civic order. And I think that shouldn't be considered hyperbole at this moment.
Catherine, I mean, it's pretty damning what he says about when only certain people feel safe to go out and protest. It's easy to think that they represent a larger group than they do. Grove says that we need to look at different ways to express our opinions.
Yeah, it is a little scary when you watch the nightly news and you see some of these demonstrations and protests, and some people have guns, and you're like, yikes.
Mm-hmm. Did you see that there was a sort of a driving protest through Waikiki yesterday of hotel workers regarding the reopening of hotels?
Yes, and they're looking for, you know, job protection, right? Because they're worried they're going to run out of health benefits, and that not all of them will be called back to work, since, you know, we're probably not going to get a huge onslaught of tourists right away. And the union, I believe, worries for those jobs.
Right. Well, they might have been out on the streets standing very close to each other in a picket line at a different time. But these types of adaptations in terms of how the public expresses itself, Grove says, this is what we need. And in terms of the elections process, Grove is saying, starting in with mail-in ballots would be a start. Common Cause, the national organization, agrees on this, and they've put out some recommendations for protecting voter security at this juncture. But Grove says the idea is voting or participation in the political system should be accessible through all kinds of means. And he says that the military votes by mail. They have not experienced difficulties there. But there may be other options, Catherine, maybe voting by text or by phone.
Yeah, and of course the concern is the security, right? And we've, heard about the president's tweets, about raising questions about whether online voting is safe.
Right. Grove says that there has yet to be credible evidence of that, of the insecurity of mail-in voting. So he says without the evidence, he really questions the motives behind a statement like that. Grove claims that Americans can file highly sensitive personal tax information online and do all kinds of things, pay bills and so forth, with their phones. So designing a safe procedure for voting, he claims, is not a technical problem. He says it's a matter of will.
And it's interesting because for those of us who are used to going to your neighborhood school, the polling places to vote, we're steeped in that tradition. And there's a part of me that still likes to do that, to cast my vote, the physical check mark or whatever on that ballot, and seeing my neighbors. And there's something that I really cherish about that process and that right to vote. I know when I just got in the mail, the paperwork for the electronic, the signature, you kind of have to stop and wonder, okay, is this okay? And you wonder, about the reliability. And so, yeah, it takes a while, I think, to get used to with technology and the changes that we're facing.
I so, identify with what you said, Catherine, because, when I would physically walk into the voting booth there in my little elementary school cafetorium, I felt like I really had something in common with people in Omaha, Dubuque, Mississippi, wherever. I mean, it's really something that we have had in common across this country. Now, if there are different ways to vote, be it text, mail, or online, what Grove says is that the government needs to start proving that those techniques will be secure so that we'll be able to trust the results of the election we have coming ahead.
And so what else does Grove recommend?
Well, there are other scenarios out there. And he says, for example, maybe this could be an apocalyptic moment, a transformational moment. Solving the COVID-19 spread could maybe fuel major advances in medical technology, CRISPR technology, genetics. So he says this could be an apocalyptic moment for us. Overall, he recommends design for not a specific scenario, but design for adaptability.
That's a good point. We've got to be resilient as a community and bounce back and be ready to handle anything.
Oh, yeah. I think we're starting on that.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much, Noe.
Hey, thank you, Catherine. Stay safe.
All right. We have been talking to HBR's Noe Tanigawa about what futurist studies can help us do as we look forward and look toward recovering from this crisis and reinventing our